On this episode of Texas Scorecard Radio, we'll hear about the factions lining up in the Texas House GOP caucus and what that means for embattled House Speaker Dennis Bonin. We'll also learn how both parties are lining up on gun legislation. In our interview, we're joined by Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, and we'll hear about his run for Texas GOP chairman. And we'll close with a commentary on how one state senator led the charge this session to defeat a sales tax increase. Welcome, Patriots, to this week's episode of Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald, coming to you from the 1836 studios in Austin, Texas. You can find us on the web at www.texasscorecard.com. Starting this week, like we have lately, with Brandon Waltons, Capitol Bureau Chief for Texas Scorecard, and we're talking developments related to this Bonin scandal. Lots of things going on inside the Texas House of Representatives Republican caucus, and you might be going, ooh, total inside baseball. Why do I care? It's an absolute proxy for where people are lining up on this scandal.
Yes, and so just to recap, the scandal, of course, we're talking about here is you have the Texas Speaker of the House, Dennis Bonin, having a meeting with Empowered Texan CEO Michael Quinn Sullivan. In that meeting is Dustin Burroughs as well, who's the chair, was the chair of the Republican caucus of the Texas House. Essentially, there is a quid pro quo offer made for media credentials in exchange for targeting of certain Republican members. This gets out. There's a recording and has really shaken up and really controlled a lot of the news cycle inside of the legislature over the last month or so. So that's the recap.
That's a very good. Yeah. You've done a very good job recapping a very complicated story. But this has led to Burroughs' departure as GOP caucus chair,
right?
And that then meant that his vice chair, Stephanie Click, state rep from Tarrant County, became the chairman. And so there's this race for vice chair.
Yes.
And you go, why do I care about vice chair?
So normally this would be very, very uninteresting. And it's only interesting because of the circumstances that are surrounding this entire shakeup. And so, yes, you had Stephanie Click, who was the vice chair. She moves up to chair when Burroughs is forced to resign. Now there's a vacancy for vice chair. And this has really created a stir. I think we talked about it. You had a number of lawmakers out there saying, about 30 actually, signing on to a letter saying, please, let's hold an in-person caucus meeting. Let's get all the Republicans together and let's talk about this. Well, the problem here is that this wasn't really about this vice chairman election to begin with. This was about probably having a meeting where people could.
What are we going to do about this Bonin guy and all the stuff that he's, you know, this scandal? So it's pretty clear the Bonin, pro-Bonin faction doesn't want a physical meeting. Click refuses to call a physical meeting. And that kind of precipitates some responses from some different folks in the caucus.
It does. And you have some lawmakers. You have State Representative Tony Tinderholt out of Arlington saying, please reconsider this decision. I mean, this is, you've got almost half the caucus. He wasn't even signed on, actually, to the original letter, but saying, I assume that, you know, this was going to happen.
Yeah, when 30 guys ask for a meeting, we're just going to have a meeting, of course.
Right. You also have some strong words from a different state representative, John Smithy.
Right, out of the panhandle. This is one of the longest serving Republicans in the House out saying, hey, we've got a Texas-sized problem here. We need to solve it.
Exactly, and pretty clear in his letter that he's not just referring to the vacancy of the vice chair of the House Republican Caucus, but again, showing that this is a big proxy war. And so you actually have candidates for these positions, two candidates. You have Jim Murphy, a state representative who is sort of the Bonin candidate, right?
Yeah, he's come and listened to the audio of the meeting and then lied about it.
Yes.
So that's he's on the Bonin.
The only person who's listened to it and pretty much gone out and lied about it, like you pointed out. You have Jim Murphy on one side. On the other side, you have Andrew Murr. He's sort of the anti-Bonin candidate in this. And so, again, you've got this election. They're not apparently going to have an in-person meeting. That's been denied, at least at this point. Voting is ongoing. They're doing it electronically. And that election will go for a couple weeks here. But it'd be very, very interesting to see because, again, this is not about one person or who's going to be the vice chair of the Republican caucus. Nobody really cares about that. This is about where does Bonin stand right now within his own caucus?
Yeah, and whether this pro-Bonin faction or the anti-Bonin faction is going to come out on top. Very interesting. We'll definitely have to keep an eye on it.
Absolutely.
Keeping our focus on the Texas Capitol, let's turn to Destin Sinsky, Texas Scorecard's Capitol correspondent. Lots of talk in and around the Capitol on both parties about prospects for gun control measures and things that could be done legislatively in response to these most recent shootings. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, Tony. So Governor Greg Abbott and his team said that they are working on a, quote, package of bills to be considered by lawmakers in Texas. But two things remain kind of uncertain about this. One, there's a lot of ambiguity about what that package entails, with only specifics being that they're going to expedite the executions of convicted mass shooters. But the rest is up in the air, and Democrats are latching on, using that as a way to kind of amplify their messaging and promote their agenda on this topic, which is mostly just gun control measures, right?
Yeah, and then also just when is this going to take place? When would it happen?
Right. So, you know, in the last session, right before what was then the upcoming 86th, these roundtable discussions that we're seeing now were had then, and it was very obviously legislation to be considered in the following legislative session. But now we're a little bit a ways away, at least it feels like, from 2021 when the next legislative session would gavel in. And so speculation about whether or not Abbott would consider a special session to address these bills and have them considered is being taken advantage of by Democrats. They're saying, yes, we need a special session. We need it now.
Yeah, and of course, they're pushing a very aggressive, you know, anti-gun rights agenda, pushing these red flag laws where you have these kind of extrajudicial confiscation of firearms, lots of very dangerous proposals like that. On the other hand, you now have some conservative legislators out saying, absolutely not. We're not going to use a crisis, these, you know, horrific events to take away the gun rights of law-abiding citizens.
Sure. Republicans starting to push back, put their opinions out there, and kind of combat the narrative that Democrats have controlled, most notably Republican State Representative Matt Schaefer of Tyler, Texas. He went super viral over the weekend, posted on Facebook and then in a thread on Twitter saying, hey, these are completely off the table. We're not going to use a crisis like this to strip law-abiding Texans of their gun rights, of their civil liberties, et cetera.
Yeah, basically saying, look, everybody says do something. Well, I'm not just going to do something that violates people's rights.
Right, and then you had every, you know, politician in the state using that as a mechanism to either, you know, beat down on Schaefer and the idea that, you know, constitutional rights aren't really negotiable, all the way to, you know, Hollywood superstars and stuff chiming in as well. So yeah, it kind of spiraled into this big...
On the upside, you know, there was some good discussion. I mean, you know, you actually had some discussion. Look, our rights come from God. We have a right to life. It means we have a right to defend our life. And that's where our right to arms comes from. Appreciate your coverage on it. I mean, we'll keep an eye on this.
Absolutely.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Hi, this is Kerry Cheshire with Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. Your state lawmaker probably campaigned as a conservative, as someone who would go to Austin to cut spending and limit government. But did he keep that promise? At index.empowertexans.com, you can see how your lawmaker voted on the major issues of the legislative session. Things like property tax relief, the state budget, and regulatory reform. You can also view his score on the Fiscal Responsibility Index and decide if he needs a pat on the back, a wag of the finger, or perhaps a permanent vacation from public service. The Fiscal Responsibility Index is the premier tool for taxpayers to hold their lawmakers accountable. Check us out today at index.empowertexans.com.
Well, it's my pleasure to welcome on the show this week, Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. Thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you, Tony. Thank you.
Well, you know, lots of folks listening, they're going to be going, you know, hey, I know this guy. I think I've seen him on Fox News, a conservative guy. They know you were a Tea Party member of Congress elected in the Tea Party wave in 2010. But they're probably less familiar with your relationship with Texas. Obviously, you were elected to Congress out of Florida. So why don't we start off? Tell us a little bit about what you've been doing since you moved to Texas.
Well, sure. My last duty assignment in the United States Army was Fort Hood, Texas. That was 2002 to 2004. Upon retirement, you know, my wife, I drug her all over the place, and her dad was career military, so I asked her wherever she wanted to go, and so we settled in South Florida. But back in October 2014, had an offer to come back to Texas, work with some public policy, and so we made the decision to come back here. Her father has since passed away, but her mom is here in the Dallas area, as well as three of her five brothers are here in Texas. And our best friends of somewhat 30 years, I was at his wedding back a time ago, they live up just south of Denton. So it's kind of like coming back home to being here in Texas for the past 5 years. And, you know, ever since I got here and people knew about me returning to Texas, been all over the state, you know, speaking and helping out with Republican clubs and organizations, Lincoln Reagan dinners and everything like that. The Texas Lieutenant Governor, Dan Patrick, even gave me an incredible opportunity in 2016 to sit on the Texas Sunset Commission as the citizen representative from the from his office, which was an incredible honor to be able to understand all of those inner workings of the Texas legislative atmosphere, and then also the you know, regulation of some of the government agencies. Wish we had something like a Sunset Commission up in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, well, and not sure if our Sunset Commission always works as intended. Well, I think a few. Well, maybe we need more sunsets. I think.
Yeah, we make the recommendations to the elected leadership, and I think that's where the constituents need to make sure they put the pressure on the elected leadership. And but it was a great process to be part of. And then, of course, just recently I was commissioned into the Texas State Guard, which is an incredible honor when you think about their history dating back prior to 1835.
Wow. Yeah. And a lot of good folks serving in that capacity. Well, let's talk about something that you're wanting to do here in Texas. Obviously, people have, if they follow the show, I think we've talked a little bit about it. You've announced a campaign to run for chairman of the Texas Republican Party. And wanted to ask, I guess, the old Roger Mudd question, why are you running?
Well, it's very important that Texas stays in the red column. And when you look at what is trending and happening in Texas right now, we're losing all the major population centers, which is the blueprint for how the left comes in and flips a red state to blue. They've done it in Nevada, Arizona, Colorado, New Mexico, Virginia, and now they're seeking to do it in Texas, as well as my birth state of Georgia and also North Carolina. So as I wrote in my book from a year ago, Hold Texas, Hold the Nation, if we lose Texas, it's over for this nation. That's how critical and important it is. And for people that are coming into Texas, people that are living here, we have to recognize that the growth, the opportunity, the prosperity of Texas is because of our constitutional conservative policies and principles. But when you start to see elected leadership that are trending away from that, then that puts Texas at a dangerous situation. So you think about the fact that none of the five legislative priorities of the Texas Republican Party was accepted in this last legislative session, and how a lot of people are, you know, pretty much so disgruntled about this last legislative session. Sure, there were some positives,
sure,
but it could have been a whole lot better. I think that causes a lot of concern. And like I said, when you look at many of the urban communities, the Black Hispanic community, they're conservative in nature. We need to get that message to them, and I think that we have not done a good job of doing that, hence why we see these major population centers trending in an opposite direction.
Yeah, so obviously people look at the map. I mean, I think there's general agreement out there that so goes Texas, so goes the nation, that we are this bulwark against the leftist takeover of the country. People tend to get that, but what you don't see a lot of is people saying, okay, well, why are we losing this ground, or why do we feel like we are losing ground? And so what are the problems? What are the, why is it that these priorities are not passing?
I think for whatever reason, there's a reticence and a recalcitrance for us to stand up for conservative principles and values. And I don't see why that would happen here in the state of Texas. I'll give you a great case in point, an example. If you are a Republican in the state assembly or the state senate out in California, you don't have any, you know, hope or prayer of anything of your priorities getting passed. Yet we continually see the Democrats here, which are really Democrat socialists, be able to wedge their way in and get some of their initiatives passed. I think we need to stand up stronger against that. And for whatever reason, also, we need to do a lot better job communicating and messaging who we are as a party. You know what really does, it makes me scratch my head when I'm out and I'm speaking to Republican groups and organizations, and I tell them that the Republican Party of Texas was founded on Independence Day, American Independence Day of 1867, by 150 blacks. That one of his earliest chairmen, about 1884 to 1898, was a guy by the name of Norris Wright Cooney, for whom Cooney Homes in Houston, Texas, is named after. But yet what just happened in Houston this last election cycle, November 2008, the Republicans got decimated. So I think that for whatever reason, the Republicans are standing up for their priorities. They're not standing up and taking their message into these communities that really do identify with who we are. And that's a powerful statement, that the Republican Party of Texas was founded by blacks. That's a national statement that's not out there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it's one of those things that obviously the media and the left want to obscure.
Need a strong voice to make sure they can't obscure it.
Now, that said, look, the strategy of saying, okay, well, Republicans have lost the African American vote 90-10 for as long as I can recall. Mm-hmm. And to say, oh, well, that's the path to victory seems a little farsighted. Obviously, we need to make inroads.
Well, I would never say that's the path to victory, but there is not a reason why we could not get 20-25% in the black community, 45-55% in the Hispanic community. You're not going to flip either one of the black or Hispanic communities in total. But for us to have given up on those communities, look at what President Trump stumbled upon with Baltimore. And, for the first time, you saw Al Sharpton show up, and he was actually heckled and booed. So I think that we should not give up on any community.
Sure.
And that has been the problem with Republicans when you brought back and said, why is it? Well, we've given up on certain communities. We've given up on college campuses. Look at what the University of Texas has become, or even some of the problems you have at Baylor University.
Sure. Yeah, even an explicitly Christian and Southern Baptist at that university, and you have the issues there. Well, let me talk about this. So, obviously, the chairman of the Republican Party of Texas has historically been a very low profile position. And obviously you have a higher profile than most. So maybe there would be an increase in that profile. But I still would suspect that were you elected as chairman, you're not going to be this prominent public figure. The prominent figures are still going to be Governor Abbott, Lieutenant Governor Patrick, the Speaker of the House, whether that remains Bonin or someone else, that you will have these major elected officials as the most prominent Republican leaders in the state. So how do you relate to those leaders as a party chairman to try and ensure that, they are leading the way that you're wanting to see the party lead?
Well, I'm not in competition with any of the people that you just mentioned. What I am looking to do is to be that person on the ground that executes a strategy and a plan and a vision for the Republican Party of Texas. And the most important thing is to raise up the next generation of strong constitutional conservative candidates that can go on to become elected officials, that we can make sure we have that steady pipeline. It's kind of like developing a farm team. But if I could use this parallel, and hopefully, people won't get all nuts. But when you looked at the German army back in World War I and World War II, the German army had two different divisions with this officer corps. One were the strategic planners, so the guy like von Schlieffen's or the Guderian's or whatever. And then you had the field commanders. You had people like Rommel and others. So I would see myself more so as a field commander. I'm out there on the ground. I'm interacting with the grassroots. I'm finding out what needs to be done. And I'm leading those troops. I'm inspiring them. And that's the important part. Now, the people up there, at the higher echelon levels, like you talked about, Lieutenant Governor, the Governor, Speaker of the House, you know, they're up there taking care of that legislative business, but they cannot forget that we have to win on the ground.
That's right.
And that's the most important thing.
Well, so to that point, what would you do differently? Because I think every party chairman I've ever heard from comes in and says, well, we need to, motivate the grassroots and build a grassroots army and these sorts of things. What mm-hmm. should we be doing differently? What would you do differently?
Well, first of all, I think that the grassroots right now is a little less inspired. I've been reading Texas Scorecard. I've been reading a lot of things out there, grassroots movement here in Texas, and they're a little bit dejected. They're a little bit despondent. And so I think it's very important that you have that conduit that can go and speak to those elected officials and say, hey, look, guys, let's cowboy up. Let's man up and let's do this thing right, because there's something bigger at stake than you just have an elected position. And that is the future of Texas. That's the future of the United States of America. We have the 11th largest economy in the world, and that's made possible because of all of the policies that are promoted here. Let's stick with those policies, and then let's stand up against this intrusion of progressive socialism.
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to be out there calling it like it is. There is this invasion by the left that is going on. Massive amounts of dollars that are coming in, and we're going to need leadership in saying, "Hey, we got to actually motivate people and respond to this crisis."
Yeah, that's absolutely the point, and I think that there has to be a certain. That's where I see the chairman of the Republican Party being that bridge. In that bridge between the folks that are on the ground, out there fighting that tactical battle, but then also being able to develop that right operational and strategic vision and guidance that connects it to the elected officials so that we can keep Texas on the right path. And so when I look at where we need to go, we need to be secure that border, talk about that. We need to keep these tax policies that are here. We need to do better with the property tax policies, but we need to make sure that we have the right relationship between the individual Texas citizen and the government down there in Austin. We cannot flip that relationship.
The right philosophy about it. Well, we're running out of time. Tell folks back home, how can they connect with your campaign, learn more about the work you're doing here?
Absolutely. It is West4Texas.com. That's West4Texas.com. Then also, the old school patriot, that's where I do a lot of my writing, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, I'm all there.
All right. Great. Well, I appreciate you coming on and excited to follow along and follow this campaign as you move forward. Appreciate it.
I appreciate you very much, Tony. Have a great day.
In this week's commentary, Carrie Cheshire, Vice President for Texans for Fiscal Responsibility, gives us a bit of a postmortem on how State Senator Paul Bettencourt stopped a misguided sales tax swap proposal this recent legislative session.
With lawmakers coming to Austin with a $10.5 billion surplus, Texas homeowners were excited about the prospect of substantial property tax relief. While they eventually received what might be considered a down payment on that relief, they narrowly staved off efforts by Republicans to increase taxes. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Kerry Cheshire, Vice President of Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. At the beginning of the 86th legislature, the Capitol was abuzz with comedy and cheeriness. With House Speaker Joe Strauss out of the way, conservatives believed their reforms could have greater success. And with Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick striking a gentler tone, establishment lawmakers were hopeful they'd be able to, quote, get things done. Meanwhile, Texas's booming economy had delivered record revenues to the state coffers. A $10.5 billion surplus was forecast by Comptroller Glenn Hager, a figure that House Appropriations Chairman John Zerwas described as, quote, more money than we've ever had, end quote. That money could be used in two ways, increasing the size of government or reducing taxes. Most in the Texas Capitol wanted the vast majority of that revenue to be spent on growing government. Well, you can imagine most taxpayers wanted that to be used to cut their property taxes. The two were at odds, and each recognized that any money spent on the other item would necessarily decrease the amount available to spend in their preferred category. Unfortunately for taxpayers, bureaucratic greed was the initial priority. Instead of competing amongst themselves, as in previous sessions, Governor Greg Abbott, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, and House Speaker Dennis Bonin worked in unison on a plan to grow the size of government, leaving very little left for property tax relief. Both chambers passed a bloated budget with only $2.7 billion, or roughly 30% of the surplus, spent on actually lowering property taxes. Their solution to actually lowering taxes? A sales tax, quote, swap, which would later be shown to be a net tax increase on the majority of Texans. In early April, the so-called Big Three issued a joint press release in which they called for a sales tax increase to provide the revenue necessary for property tax relief. Quote, Texans are fed up with skyrocketing property taxes. At the beginning of the legislative session, the governor, lieutenant governor, and speaker laid out an agenda for property tax relief through the passage of Senate Bill 2 and House Bill 2 to limit property tax growth. In addition to that effort, today we are introducing a sales tax proposal to buy down property tax rates for all Texas homeowners and businesses, once Senate Bill 2 or House Bill 2 is agreed to and passed by both chambers. If the 1% increase in the sales tax passes, it will result in billions of dollars in revenue to help drive down property taxes in the short and long term, end quote. While they declined to recommend a particular bill in their statement, many in the Texas Capitol took it as a tacit endorsement of State Representative Dan Huberty's proposed constitutional amendment, House Joint Resolution 3. As filed, that bill was a dollar-for-dollar swap. Reports out of the Capitol, however, indicated Huberty was willing and prepared a community substitute that would divert 25% of the sales tax revenue increase towards increasing teacher pay in an effort to get Democrat votes, something that would likely be necessary given the two-thirds vote requirement to pass a constitutional amendment. Conservatives quickly cried foul, noting that such a spending diversion would result in a $2.5 billion tax increase on Texans. A few weeks later, with conservative criticism of their plan mounting, Patrick, Abbott, and Bonin escalated further at a joint press conference in support of the proposal, in which they promised to answer all questions from reporters. While putting a sales tax increase in its current proposal would require two-thirds of the legislature's approval, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick indicated that he was willing to sidestep voters if the two chambers couldn't reach that threshold. Quote, I hope we get enough votes to make this a constitutional amendment, said Patrick, saying he expected voters to, quote, overwhelmingly support the proposal. Quote, if it doesn't, we'll make it happen anyway, he said. But after taking only a few questions, Abbott's spokesman announced that the press conference was over, a move that visibly surprised even the governor. Texans would soon find out the reason for the cancellation of the event. Newly released numbers from the Legislative Budget Board showed a majority of Texans would pay a net tax increase under the proposal. Under the LBB's figures, only those Texans with a combined household income of roughly 100 grand or more, only about 25% of Texans' households statewide, would see a net tax cut. The remaining three-quarters of Texans would be on the hook for a net tax increase. With that information in hand, taxpayers were furious, especially after realizing how much extra revenue Texans already had for tax relief from existing revenue streams. A hastily conducted poll showed that Texans of all stripes and all ideological persuasions heavily opposed the measure. Working fervently to stop the tax hike, State Senator Paul Bettencourt called a meeting of the Texas Senate and excluded Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. There, he convinced lawmakers to oppose the measure and replace it with existing tax revenue instead. Less than 3 days after Dan Patrick had announced a sales tax would pass, by hook or by crook, it was dead in the Texas Senate. And on the next day, it was dead in the Texas House. While taxpayers were thrilled with Paul Bettencourt for defeating the controversial tax increase and ensuring greater property tax relief, Abbott, Patrick, and Bonin were publicly furious. In retaliation for Bettencourt's actions in defense of taxpayers and the state's Republican majority in the upcoming elections, he was not appointed by Patrick to chair the conference committee of his own bill, the property tax reform package in Senate Bill 2. And adding insult and injury, Patrick disinvited him, the bill author, from the bill signing with the press after the session. While the Abbott-Patrick-Bonin tax increase was defeated this session, rumors from the Capitol, as well as remarks by the Big Three themselves, continue to suggest the issue will come back in the next legislative session. Taxpayers should be ready to confront it when it does.
With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Kerry Cheshire.
Well, that's it for this episode. If you want more news, check us out on the web at www.texasscorecard.com. Also, subscribe to the podcast. We're available on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.